another guest speaker then for a few of you that can make it. Today we have Dr. Charles Morgan coming to talk to us about neuroscience and psychology and a whole gamut of things. Right now he is a professor of national security studies at the University of New Haven. His focus is teaching national security studies, domestic and international intelligence analysis, and issues in deception. Dr. Morgan is developing a concentration in the human aspects, intelligence analysis, and psychological operations arenas that are relevant to the intelligence community. He has a pretty robust background with military folks, doing research at Sears School, helping with selection processes for special operations forces down at Fort Bragg, et cetera, et cetera. So without further ado, I will hand it off to you.
Thank you.
It's nice to be here. Actually, I was a Navy guy. I wasn't Army, but I've done more work with the Army, I think, over all these years than I ever did with the Navy. So what I would like to talk to you a little bit about today is something I was asked to do in 2010 and 2011. I was getting ready to leave over at the CIA, where I'd worked for a number of years, and the Intelligence Science Board said, could you give us a brief on what's in store for us in the future? So I told my boss at the time, I said, well, I think the best I'll do is make an estimate over what I think is going to happen in the next 5 years, given certain technologies that were being developed at the time. And this is a bit of an extension of that. I presented to the SSG, and it was some information I think some people didn't know, and I think it's good for people to be aware of what's going on out there. The one thing that makes predicting a little bit of the future easier when you look at biomedical science is that labs are working fairly systematically with overtly stated goals. So that's a little bit of what this is about. I was going to give you my thoughts on mind, body, and beyond, gene slicing, Dr. Ventnor's work, DNA encryption, and something about memory, that the past is not what it used to be. This is actually having one animal learn something and seeing and recording that activity and put it into the sensory cortex of the second animal, and that animal acquires the knowledge. From the human drone technology standpoint, you can attach the human brain to another human brain, you can direct motor activity, or you can send communication and information. Dr. Ventnor's work is, my view, the equivalent of the development of nuclear weapons. The equivalent of the development of nuclear weapons when you realize that he created life in a cell. He programmed yeast cells to produce anything he wanted. These can be inserted into you through the hypospray needles. You put in a specific gene slicing, you program what you like, you put it in the cell, and it can reproduce and make as much as you like. It sends a signal and tells which portion of the DNA should unwrap, unfold, and produce a product. Related to this is an idea called DREADs. These are designer receptors that can be remotely controlled. You can create a cell, you can put it somewhere in the body, and you can remotely activate it. So you have the capacity to create any product. As long as you know the DNA sequence, you can insert it into a living system, and you can remotely control it. That may affect the way you think, the way you act. So once you know that the technology is there to edit, splice, and program a cell, and the technology currently exists to administer it to somebody and have it go park anywhere you program it to go park, proliferate, and do its function, you can have things activated in other people's brains. Just people have figured out how to hide imagery in the DNA of bacteria. You can have the information reproduced in a string form as a form of a protein. The new way to hide information is going to be in DNA. This is the first experiment showing what imagery you can hide in bacteria. This is the latest. It's a GIF file. Well, this is what the Chinese are doing with DNA. Merging DNA systems with quantum computing will be really quite an amazing and both lethal threat. The next thing I wanted to mention to you is memory. Can we erase memory? Can we modify memory? Can we change memory? The short answer is yes, yes, yes. And what they're able to do back in 2008 with a primate is have it learn through trial and error that by thinking, it can move a robotic arm and feed itself. It didn't take too long for the neural interface issue to be resolved once people figured out you could implant electrodes on brain tissue and then take a biological signal and turn it into an electrical signal and amplify it. The natural segue then would be, if I can send motor function from a brain to a mechanical arm, is it possible to send motor functions from one human to another human? So I call it the possession experiment.
Now, do you know the phrase brain power? Well, it turns out that scientists at the University of Washington are trying to hone that power and transmit it to another brain. Researchers call it direct brain-to-brain communication, and they do it by passing a signal from one mind to the next, using the internet nonetheless.
You can watch the video, but essentially what's happening is when one person is playing the video game, they're not using their hands. They're simply looking at targets. What's going on in the other room is a transcranial magnetic stimulation device that creates a magnetic field that excites neurons, and it's the other man's hand that begins to move and hits the targets. So you've co-opted the portion of a body of another human, and then their hand can behave in the way that you want it to do, in the way that you want it to do. But the person on the receiving end described the sensation as rather odd. Said, I didn't know anything until I saw my hand beginning to move, and felt that it was something other, and its hand was moving, hand could punch in a code, hand could do a number of things. But the really fun part was that you're taking over somebody else's physical body, with the mind of another human, So what do you think would be the next step? You follow medical research, you say you can make a robot move, you can make a human hand move. What would you do next? You say, wow, they're getting brains connected to run things. And I have to begin to think either like doctors or like, security and intelligence people, right? Can you actually send and receive sensory information? Like the Matrix. The short answer is, Yes. So it took some learning trials, but not many. It took 75 between them to achieve an accuracy rate of over 85% in just training their rats for a little while in the cages. But this was a milestone because it was not simply using the motor cortex to run a device. This was actually having one animal learn something and seeing and recording that activity and put it into the sensory cortex of the second animal, and that animal acquires the knowledge. It is able to act on the knowledge from the experience for something it has not ever done. What we do know is that DARPA did get permission for 500 operations to do deep brain electrode implants. They haven't published anything yet, but my guess is what you're looking at is human-human thought transference, and certainly in the open science world, that was published last month. Actually, the brain-to-brain transfer of sensory information in two humans. And they achieved a success rate of being right 85% of the time. So you can attach one human brain to a device. You can attach the human brain to another human brain. You can direct motor activity, or you can send communication and information. But you could plug in somewhere else in the world and learn something or see something or have somebody acquire the information that you have, and you wouldn't have to carry a different device. So that's what people are doing. There's a whole world out there of biohacking. I don't know if you're aware of it, but you should be. So normally at the university, we are well regulated by the federal laws about studying and experimenting on humans. There's a biohacking community that is not part of the official science community that is busy trying to attach hardware to humans, and they do it in their basements. They study up on how to do the surgeries, how to connect devices, how to put motherboards in people, And they may use it for some purposes, like phishing, using RFID signals in their hands to take information from you. But there are some other interesting developments. When you start thinking about the fluidity of what you can do with the brain, they're experimenting with CE6 and giving people with eye drops night vision. For several hours, a person receiving the night drops can see over 160 feet in the dark. So it's a lot easier to look through your own eyes than it is to put on nods. And it will be a short time before you get a better solution than we get from the biohacking community, but it could also be readily available to almost anybody on the planet, it's going to be harder to keep this under control than it is to keep the special lenses and night vision technology. So I think it's really important that people pay attention to this kind of thing, because that can give humans the natural ability for a while to see in the dark. So when you think about it, the possibility now is there to develop different kinds of devices. They could be perhaps used either by intelligence people or by people in the military to have an extra ability to be able to see through walls, to see heartbeats. We used to play with the 18 gigahertz microwave detectors where we could pick up heartbeats through anything but solid steel and water, but that could easily be a human who can see the unique heartbeat that's behind the wall over there that's thermal insensitive. So it doesn't have to be IR. It can be a number of things. Anything that you can co-opt is theoretically now possible to adapt to human brain functioning. All you'd have to learn is the code. You'd have to train with it. The experiment that was just released this last month, as I said, demonstrated that people could transfer knowledge from one human to another. And I commented to a couple of my colleagues, and I said, I think right now the most direct application of that is going to be either covert communication or running drones. The set of experiments, I didn't have videos to show you, but there have been a series that have shown you can connect the human brain to a rat and control its motor movement and its tail. So you can have non-human animal drones. You can have the human brain probably run a regular drone at this point, but running a non-human drone, something like a cockroach or a rat, would it be awesome. And now if you were watching the Olympics and you see the coordinated maze of drones, the software is now really readily available, where you could have hordes of little creatures that can gain access to facilities or move around in different places, all run by a person sitting in a booth. It's no more technically challenging once you do that than figuring out the logistics of how you're going to send your signal somewhere else in the world and how to protect that signal. But that's now. That's not in the future. So that I would recommend people becoming aware of that from the human drone technology standpoint. The second field that people may or may not be aware of I always tell my students, I said I wasn't around when they developed atomic weapons, but Dr. Ventnor's work is, my view, the equivalent of the development of nuclear weapons when you realize that he created life in a cell. Back in 2010. I don't know if people are familiar with his work, but this technology paired with something called CRISPR, which is like an editing software for genes, makes a number of things immediately available. What he did is he programmed yeast cells to produce anything he wanted. They can produce perfume, they can produce petroleum, they can produce any peptide, anything we program the DNA to do, and it's in the living cell. These can be inserted into you through the hypospray needles, almost like Dr. McCoy on Star Trek, giving you the hyperspray. It just blasts now plasmids into your squamous cells. But Ventnor was able to do that and has the patent on the technology. But you can engineer anything. You can engineer a unique thing that would only kill one person in the world. It's how it's done. You put in a specific gene slicing, you program what you like, you put it in the cell, and it can reproduce and make as much as you like. For those of you who don't know, your DNA is usually all wrapped up in tight little coils. And so what you're doing is, when they create plasmids and put them into cells, it sends a signal and tells which portion of the DNA should unwrap, unfold, and produce a product. But you can engineer anything. You can engineer a unique thing that would only kill one person in the world. It's how it's done.
Many years ago, like over decades ago, DARPA wanted to put chips in people's
brains.
For people
who don't know, DARPA is the technological development arm of the Pentagon.
Well, they do black ops.
Yeah.
So they wanted to put chips in RFIDs, like the ones that you see, the little grain of rice, in people's brains, but they didn't want to have to do surgery. So after many, many years, they came up with a gel that would do the same thing. And it's very insidious, and I'll be describing it right now. They do that. This gel is called Hydrogel or Quantum Dot. Bill Gates' Quantum Dot. So what will happen with the vaccine is you get it injected into you, and then it assembles. It's self-assembled.
But you can engineer anything. You can engineer a unique thing that would only kill one person in the world. That's how it's done.
And then it swarms through your body. There are 33 different classifications, and yes, the number is precise, with cultic meaning. 33 different classifications of robots, each with a different mission and a payload deployed into your body. They can swarm. This is scalable. And what scalable means is that it can target one cell in your body. It could target an organ. It could target you.
You can engineer a unique thing that would only kill one person in the world. That's how it's done.
It can target, let's say, everybody with blonde hair. It could target everyone in a particular country. It could target somebody of a particular faith belief. It is scalable, very flexible. So then what it does is these robots get it to cleave. So you've got your red blood cell here, and here's this SynBio. And what it does is there's clamps. Some of these robots are clamps, some are levers, some have other functions. And what they do is they hold your cell until your cell is basically swallowed up by the SynBio. I'm going to tell you the whole thing, then I'll go back and tell you another insidious thing about it. So then what it does is it swarms and it crosses your blood-brain barrier and it takes over your brain.
Related to this is an idea called DREADs. These are designer receptors that can be remotely controlled. So think about it for a moment. You can create a designer receptor, you can create a cell, you can put it somewhere in the body, and you can remotely activate it when the brain's exposed to the right signal. Using this technology, people have been able to transfer memories from one fruit fly to another by signaling through a light stimulus into the retina. Right now, it's done by putting a substance into their body. That will actually activate the neuron in the way that you want it. So you have the capacity to create any product. As long as you know the DNA sequence, you can insert it into a living system and you can remotely control it. Now, one of the challenges that we have is that when you create a cell and you put it in somebody's body, you have to figure out where you want it. What if you want it in their brain? Right? If you want it in their brain and you can't figure out, you don't want to do surgery to plant it in their brain. If I want a product produced in your brain that may affect the way you think, the way you act, one route to that is through stem cells. Here, a quick brush up on your biology. Stem cells are cells. They call them God cells. They can turn into anything. They hold the potential, unlike other cells in your body, to become anything you want them to become. And they can go find their home in the body and park there and do the work that you'd like them to do. You can infuse them and they will find their way into the brain. So once you know that the technology is there to edit, splice, and program a cell, and the technology currently exists to administer it to somebody and have it go park anywhere you program it to go park, proliferate, and do its function, you can have things activated in other people's brains. So if you take these three key points, hopefully you can see it opens up a number of both alarming and exciting possibilities. A number of both alarming and exciting possibilities. You can have the timed release of information on demand. Hopefully, when I mentioned the word CRISPR and word editing and creating molecules with CRISPR out of and playing with DNA, some of you thought encryption and encoding. So DNA encryption, there were, I think, 8 articles published by China in the course of 3 years, in the last 3 years, and it's quite important. The coding system, DNA steganography, I'll just say the short story on this is people have figured out how to hide imagery in the DNA of bacteria, and when you phosphoresce the bacteria, you can discover the information, or you can have the, those are just to remind me, you can have the information reproduced in a string form as a form of a protein. Dr. Church up at Harvard has shown quite well that you can store a lot of information in 1 gram of DNA. It's essentially, yeah, that many iPads in 1 gram at room temperature. No super cooling required. DNA is highly stable. It's been around on the planet a very long time. So between CRISPR, the storage capacity, and programming cells, the new way to hide information is going to be in DNA. The commercial application is going to be a bit like on Star Trek years ago. Why would you have a digital system when you can have a DNA system? You can store all the information you'd ever need, records, photos, anything. It's simply another way of storing information. But it is. This was the first experiment showing what imagery you can hide in bacteria. This is the latest. It's a GIF file. It was actually programmed into the DNA of bacteria last year. The bacteria reproduced, and the offspring from the reproduction cycle would still produce this movie. Pretty cool. You can hide information in bacteria. And when the bacteria multiply, they can go into a spore form and last for a very long time. No one can scan you and find a bacteria. We don't have anything that can detect that. So if you want to be able to encode information, take pictures of information, create something in DNA and don't want it in your own body, it can be bacteria on some portion of your body, right? All they have to do is scrape it, let it grow in the petri dish, and unpack the information. This is all available now. This isn't science fiction, but you can encode movies. Well, this is what the Chinese are doing with DNA. So in your own neck of the woods, you can begin inquiring. We are doing things with DNA as well. But the Chinese are fairly convinced that DNA encryption and encoding would be one tremendous challenge even for quantum computing. So this is where the race is right now, trying to merge quantum computing with what you'd call a wet hard drive with DNA. Merging DNA systems with quantum computing will be really quite an amazing and both lethal threat for that. The next thing I wanted to mention to you is memory. Can you play this one really quick? Hopefully you'll recognize this. So, what to do with memory? In medicine, we think of memory as a potentially harmful thing when people present with post-traumatic stress disorder. They can't stop thinking about the thing that's creating emotional distress. It's a very active development in the field to figure out, can we erase memory? Can we modify memory? Can we change memory? The short answer is yes. You could train the mice to run the maze, document the number of trials and errors, and then flood their hippocampus or expose it to this, and the memory would be completely gone. Meaning when the rats or the mice had to learn it over again, it was the same number of learning trials. In other words, there's no trace of the memory left. Now the good news for us when we study rats and mice is we put electrodes and cannulae into their brain and can directly affect that area of the brain If you wanted to poke your own hippocampus, you'd have to stick your finger through your eye and go right back in there. Sounds impossible to get to. Not if you program a cell to go there. Not if you program a cell to go there. So if you decide you wanted to program something that would selectively release PKM zeta after your meeting with someone, they probably would have no memory of it. The last topic I wanted to review with you is memory, for a very interesting reason. So this is in 2009, using light, you've transferred memory. You can turn things on and off using light in animals to activate the hippocampus, turn memory on and off. And so where are we with humans in creating false memories, giving them memories that they've never had? We've come a long way. My colleague is Beth Loftus. This was her early work. It was called Lost in a Mall. And what she did is she asked a person to be in the study. You could be in her study if you had a sibling that was at least 5 years older than you. And she'd say, we're interested in your memory from when you were a kid. I've asked your older sibling, your older brother or sister, to give me 4 stories about you, and I want to know how much you remember. What people didn't know is that there were 4 different stories. One of them was fake, and she wanted to see how long it would take for them to adopt a false memory. The quick answer is, after 2 interview sessions, 30% of the subjects believed that they remembered the person who'd found them when they were lost at a mall, and actually argued with the researcher about whether or not the memory was true or not. And that's how I met her, and we decided to get together and run up to Brunswick to Sears School and try a memory experiment. This is our design. If you're not familiar with Sears, there's a classroom phase, there's an experiential phase. We were interested in sampling people when they were in isolation, when they were returning their gear, and at the end. And we tried a couple of different techniques. Group 1, there's no misinformation. We simply want to sample accuracy of human memory for their experience. And we told them at the beginning of SEER, we want you to be the best little human collector possible. We are going to quiz you about your memory. Don't let us trick you. We want to know what you remember. Group 2, we told them the same thing, but we lied. When they took their questionnaire at the end, we incorporated several techniques from false memory techniques, which are a little bit of leading questions to see whether or not we could create false memories. In the third group, we exposed them to an erroneous photograph of their interrogator. And in group four, we used a video. So here's what we did. By exposing them to a photograph after they had been interrogated and placed in isolation stress, it could change them from this guy to this guy 48 hours later on who they would identify in the lineup. Their level of confidence was an 8 out of 10, that was the person they had met. We found out we could make them believe that there were guns, that there were knives, that there were caches of weapons, simply by altering the phrasing of a question or inserting something into a video. I'll give you an example. If we said, did your interrogator wear a weapon? If so, please describe it. We only got about a 2% endorsement of the presence of a weapon in the interrogation phase. If we said, when you were being interrogated by your interrogator and the guy with the weapon interrupted the interrogation, what did they argue about? We didn't care what the answer was. We'd ask another question. They'd say, describe the weapon worn by your interrogator. It jumped to 30%, would tell us the type of firearm that they had seen in the interrogation booth, which is a security violation, right? There weren't any. We got to record them. But with one question, we could do that. When you sample with a few more, you can actually increase the sample. So when we increased the stress at SEER, we found that instead of a 30% rate overall, we could create false memories in nearly everyone. That was in 900 people, nearly everyone. That was in 900 people. So Beth and I were talking about that. We said, well, you can change memory. We know that. So to change human motivation, we don't have to persuade people. You can just change their memory. Change their memory. And when I think about this, I think about its relevance in this day and age when you start wondering what information is real and what information is trustworthy. And you start running into people and debriefing them, and you have sources who claim things. When you can learn how to create false memories, a person can be genuine and the information they remember is the old dangle idea. You can put information out that's simply not true. But in the current social media age, the ability to actually manage people's memories and change them, manage people's memories and change them is just enhanced compared to what it used to be. Now you can fix videos and pictures and expose people to audio and visual information. And we know that even if they know that's a possibility, people don't recognize when they adopt a false memory. It's a bit of a Trojan horse effect. You don't know that it's happened to you. And if you're smart and you have a good memory, you'll believe that happens to other people, but not you, because your memory is true. So it bypasses some critical reasoning on our part. And I think it's particularly effective. That's where the state of the art is right now for creating false memories in humans, is doing that verbally or by these manipulations with either what we say, what we show them, what we expose them to. But the chemical implanting of memories has now occurred in monkeys. And the last thing I'll say, I didn't have any videos for it. I really wanted to show you one, but the French have published a very interesting paper. And it is this. While people were sleeping, they were able to train them and sample their knowledge in what they trained them in while they were asleep, and while they were later awake and didn't know that they'd learned the information. So I'll say it again. In people who were asleep, they were able to tell what people knew around word recognition lists without ever waking the person up. They were also able to train new memory and information, outside the person's awareness while they were asleep. Where that technology can go is some very interesting places. It would really raise, since I was in the lane of DS&T and we talked about deception and everybody was arguing about how to interrogate people, it raises an immediate question about whether or not you can sample information in people's brains outside of their awareness. The problem with a CAT scan and a PET scan, any technology, is you have to have a willing subject. They do need to sit still. If people are asleep and you can begin to sample what their brain recognizes, it offers a number of opportunities at looking at guilty knowledge, brain recognition waveforms, and sampling some kinds of information. If they have to do the brain implants, we'll know sooner, because I can't see any other reason why DARPA got approval for 500 deep brain implants.
Many years ago, like over decades ago, DARPA wanted to put chips in people's brains.
I think the next step is going to be a hive brain. It's already been done in rats. You can link multiple brains, and as a hive, they solve problems much faster than the individual rat. So that technology's here. I'm assuming they'll link people to have a productive life, live in virtual reality, move robotic things. They can probably problem solve. So I think in the next few years, that's what we'll see, is brain-to-brain linking for problem solving, and to see if it makes it more efficient. But those are a couple of technologies I wanted to make you aware of. And then you can run away and think about their more direct applications. I tend to think of things from a medical perspective and from an intelligence and information perspective. But it's no longer really science fiction, and most of these fields have moved faster than I actually thought in 2010. The only one has been expanding memory that hasn't moved as fast. But I thought I would share that with you, and that's all I had to say. So thank you for your time. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan. We're pretty much out of time, yeah, but we'll be hanging out up here for a little bit. So if anybody has questions, feel free to come up. And thank you for coming.